morning of the first day of the retreat, the talk which I usually give is just a basic outline of the practice of meditation you're going to be doing here the next 9 days. Last night I gave an overview of what meditation is, especially the overview of learning how just to relax, to let go and allow things to happen. If one was very smart, had a real understanding of what I meant, that's all you'd really need to get into the very depths of meditation. That's all you really needed, actually, to get enlightened. This ability to let go and to allow the mind to open up and to see what's inside. However, because many people have a difficult time letting go, as soon as they try that very simple practice, their mind wanders all over the place and they get frustrated, disappointed. So because of one's ability to understand really what those deep teachings meant, we always give what sometimes I call an idiot's guide to meditation. Because we have all these books these days, you see in the shops, an idiot's guide to computing, an idiot's guide to something else. I don't mean to call anyone silly, but it's just the way of talking in these days. What it does, it gives you a bit more information on how to stop doing things. So instead of actually stopping doing things all at once, letting go completely and seeing this process of meditation unfold in front of one's mindfulness, sometimes we can play this little skillful means in order to let go stage by stage, step by step. There's an old simile of a person climbing up a ladder. When they're climbing up a ladder, they're letting go of the lower realms, you know, the ground where they used to sit. And they're actually getting higher and higher and higher above the world as they climb that ladder. But as you are climbing a ladder, always remember you have to grasp and hold on to the rung which is above you. You have to attach to it very firmly. And then you pull yourself up, using that as an attachment. And as you pull yourself up, there comes a time when that rung of the ladder, which you once grasped so tightly and used as a lever to pull you up, now you're standing on that. And this is the time when you let go of that rung. So climbing up the ladder, we attach until the job, the purpose of that attachment has been completed, and then we let it go to go higher. So using that simile of the ladder, we have these stages of meditation. Stages which you can almost attach to let go of something more coarse. You attach to the more refined to let go of the more coarse. And later on, what you once attached to as being refined, you have to let go eventually. It's almost like the Buddha's simile of the raft, which he used to cross the lake. You attach to that raft for a while, but when the raft has done its job, then you let it go. So we have all these stages of meditation. And in the way of meditation, which I've been teaching for many years now, having recognized the way that the mind becomes still, the first thing which I'd encourage you to attach to is the present moment. We do that in order to let go of this perception of time. You may have realized from what I was saying yesterday, especially when I started talking about having no bells. And when we have bells and clocks, we do become prisoners of time. And you know you're a prisoner of time when you start thinking, how many more minutes have left before this finishes? How many more minutes have gone? How many more days are there? How many more sort of weeks, months, years of my life? I remember once when I was teaching in school, one of my colleagues had just got a job, a very good job in some business, but he had to wait for another 3 or 4 months to finish off the year of school teaching. I remember him coming up to me once and said he just caught himself wishing away months of his life so he can go and get this good job and leave the school. And some of us, that's what we do, we wish away months of our life when we're thinking about a beautiful thing we're going to do, maybe next year. When you think of how short our life is and how precious every day is, it's not really wise to be wishing away months of our life. Not even wishing away months of our life, even wishing away weeks of our life, or wishing away days of our life, or wishing away hours or minutes of our life. Sometimes some of you might be thinking, oh, a few days ago, you can't wait to come on the retreat. Once one's on retreat, one can't wait to have it finished. One is always looking for the future. So one becomes a prisoner of time, always counting the minutes, always counting the hours, the days. So here we try and attach this beautiful present moment, the now. Unfortunately, that each one of you has the opportunity to do that in this retreat. Because there are no bells, because there is no schedules you have to really keep, because you're not going to be criticized or get in trouble for being late or for being early, because you can sleep whatever time you wish. This is a very rare occasion when you can liberate yourself from time. When you feel like sleeping, you sleep. When you feel like waking, you wake. When you feel like meditating, you meditate. When you feel like walking, you walk. When you eat, you cultivate the present moment awareness. Even when we have our lunch period, you may find that sometimes when you're eating, you have some food in your mouth. You have some more food on the spoon waiting in line. You've already heaped up the next piece of food on your plate when your mind is looking at what you're going to have next. You're usually 3 or 4 spoons ahead of yourself. When we practice present moment awareness, we just have one spoon at a time. We put that in our mouth. We chew it, masticate it, and swallow it before we even think of what we're going to have put next on our spoon or fork. That's called present moment awareness, so you can really appreciate your food. So, by letting go of time, by abandoning time, by attaching to the present moment, just now, just now, just now, just now, one is practicing one of the first levels of letting go, the letting go of time. So make that an important part of the practice here for the next 9 days, because present moment awareness is something you can do at any time. Even if you go to bed and you can't sleep, doesn't matter, just present moment awareness. Sometimes the reason you can't sleep is because you go off into the future. Oh, if I don't go to sleep quickly, I'll be in big trouble. Oh, it's 1 o'clock, it's 2 o'clock, I haven't gone to sleep yet. Oh, it's 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, what am I going to do? It's all like future perceptions which create the worries and the fears. All fear is about something unpleasant which you think is going to happen next. All worry is the same. If you can attach to this present moment during this retreat, you'll find that so much trouble, so much which obsesses and tortures the mind, has been abandoned. So one attaches to the present moment as much as one can. When one's sitting, one is walking, when one is on the toilet, when one is sleeping, just now, just now, just now. And even when one is meditating, make the present moment the most important. And if you can really do that, there's no such thing about what am I going to do next. Next doesn't come into your perception anymore. There is no word next. Next is just a dream, a fantasy. Now is the only reality you have. What happened in the past? What happened yesterday? What happened this morning? Who cares? You practice that present moment awareness, you're doing a lot to make the mind peaceful. You're letting go of 95% of the problems of the world. So attach to the present moment. Allow the mind to hold on to it. When you hold on to something like that, at first it's a bit unpleasant. But for some people that's the only way they can do it. I've been giving the simile of when you first ride a bicycle. When I first ride a bicycle, because of fear of falling off, one holds on to the handlebars too tightly. one's knuckles go white. Because one is so stiff holding on to the handlebars of a bicycle, that's why you fall off. If I could only relax, the more relaxed one is, the less likely it is that one falls off. Many years ago, someone told me a very interesting simile. For those of you who haven't heard this before, it's quite strange why, when birds go to sleep, they sleep up on the branches and the twigs of the trees. And when they go to sleep, during the night, there may be a strong wind. And you see those trees swaying in the wind. But it doesn't matter how much those trees sway in the wind, you never see a bird falling off. Now imagine that was you going to sleep on a branch of a tree when it was swaying backwards and forwards. You'd fall off after 5 minutes, even less. So how is it that the birds can actually stay on top of those trees without falling off? Not one of them falls off. Does it mean that they don't get any sleep that night? The answer is no, because this biologist, zoologist, told me that when a bird roosts on the tree, when it grasps the twig or the branch with its claws, the more it relaxes, the more those claws close up. The more it lets go, the tighter the grip. And if it really lets go fully and falls asleep, those claws are so tightly embedded in on the twig or in the branch, even the strongest of winds won't take it off. When it wakes up in the morning, it has to perform an act of will, effort, to unlock its claws. The more relaxed, the more stable and safe that bird is. The more it tenses up, the more its claws open out. That's a great simile for meditation, because at first one holds on to, say, the present moment, and sometimes because you're holding on, it's not all that easy. But at least you're on there, you're holding on a little bit, let go a little bit more. The more you let go, the easier it is. You let go a bit more, it becomes more easy, and soon you have present moment awareness clearly there, and you can relax with it. The more you relax, the more you stay in the present moment. What happens, why it's more easy, the more relaxed one is because when one isn't tense, one is enjoying the moment more. Instead of fighting, one is making peace, and it's much better to have a friend than to have an enemy. You spend more times with your loved ones than you do with the ones you hate. So if you like hating the present moment, if you don't like it, you're forcing yourself to be in the present moment, there's not that kindness, that joy, that happiness, which is the glue which sticks the mindfulness onto its object. You can imagine mindfulness, you can imagine the object which you're watching. How can those two come together? You can force them on, force mindfulness onto something. But you won't be able to maintain that for very long. And you'd be tense, you'd be tight. Instead of forcing your attention onto an object, once that object starts to be comfortable, beautiful, lovely, then you can relax and you stay there. When you first meditate on the breath, first meditate on the present moment, it might be uncomfortable. But you stay there for a while, and with patience, the present moment becomes quite beautiful, quite lovely. You can relax a little bit more and it stays even more lovely. This is the way you get present moment awareness. A little bit of force to begin with, and then lessen that force, lessen, 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 until you're being effortlessly aware of the present moment. When that happens, you can say you've got that stage of meditation fully down. Full present moment awareness. So whether you're walking, whether you're sitting, whether you're coming and going, you're here. You're not thinking about your life outside of this retreat center. You're not thinking of your life outside of this moment. Just being fully aware of now. Now, I've noticed this because I do a lot of travelling these days. The first night when I go anywhere, I never sleep well. Second night, always sleep very soundly. Even the room which I'm staying in now, in this retreat centre, I stayed in that room many, many times, but still, the first night is never that good a sleep. Same with you, you probably didn't sleep that well last night. But you find the second night is much easier, the third night is just ordinary, and the fourth night is like being back at home again. Why is that? It's just familiarity, that's all. It's just the psychology of the mind. When it's in a place it knows and it feels comfortable, it recognises, then it relaxes. It's the same with the present moment. When you first come in contact with the present moment, it might be hard to keep awareness of it. But with familiarity, the more you hang out in the present moment, the more you can relax with it, the easier it is, and soon you have present moment awareness without any effort at all. It's the first stage of meditation. Attach to present moment awareness. In other words, the mind goes off into the future, bring it back into the now. The mind goes off into the past, bring it back into the present moment. Wherever it goes, keep bringing it back. This is what we mean like attaching to the present moment. Until the mind doesn't go anywhere, then you can relax and let go more. Similarly, from many, many years ago, it's like a child who's playing in a garden, and the garden is next to a busy road, and the poor mother can never keep full attention on their children. They've got other things to do in the house. And usually what happens, the mother turns its attention away for 1 second, and then the child's out on the busy road. So what does the mother do? The mother goes out, takes her child by the hand, and brings it inside. But brings it inside gently. If that mother went out there onto that busy road and slapped the kid around and shouted on it and beat it, now that's not a very skillful mother. In Australia you go to jail for doing things like that. Now in that simile, that's what happens to some people. You tell them to please keep your mindfulness in the garden of the present moment, because the past and the future, like the busy road, are dangerous. But what happens? Your mindfulness goes wandering out into the busy road of the past and future, and then you go and take your mind, you slap it. Don't do that again, you stupid mind. Beat it, shout at it. Don't be hard on your mind. Otherwise, you'll be a victim of not domestic abuse, but meditation abuse. Don't be an abusive meditator. Be kind to your mind, like a persistent mother. Every time her child wanders out to the road, she gently but firmly brings it back again. The child goes again, it brings it back. The mother is so patient, it might be 50, 100 times, 1,000 times. The mother goes out and brings the child back. And of course, if the mother is very diligent, after a while the child realizes, what's the point of running out onto the road? Every time I go out there, my mother comes and brings me back. Until the child doesn't even bother going out into the road anymore. It just stays in the garden. And at that point, the mother can really relax. She can even go and read a book, because once the child is well trained, the mother doesn't need to put so much supervision over it. In the same way that once your mind is well trained to stay with the present moment, once it gets accustomed to being the present moment, then it just stays there. You don't have to even force it to move back into the moment. It just doesn't go anywhere. It actually enjoys being in the moment. And that's the first stage of this meditation, present moment awareness. Sometimes that people, because we're in societies which reward success, where people have goals, and when you meet that goal and you get that goal quickly, you get prizes. Because of that, some people, when they meditate, think, yeah, present moment awareness, been there, done that, I want jhanas, let's get rid of this ordinary stuff, I want the high stuff. But please don't move too fast in your meditation. The present moment is like the foundation of a multi-story building. If you don't put that foundation in place and make it very, very strong, sure, the first, second, third stories go up very quickly, but the fourth, fifth and sixth stories go down very quickly too, because you haven't built on a strong foundation. So make sure the present moment is very, very strong. Some of my monks, I really admire them, sometimes they spend months just doing present moment awareness and nothing else. These are monks, and they're very good, because once they get that very strong, the other stages go really, really quickly. And after present moment awareness, what's the next stage? It's the silence of the mind. So there's no thinking going on, there's no complaining, there's no planning, there's no words. You know, we have governments in our countries, and in those governments our politicians talk so much, because talking is what we do to govern. And it's the same, we've got governments, parliaments inside our heads, it's called brains. And they sort of always thinking this and planning that, complaining. If you look at things like the Australian Parliament, sometimes they televise it, and they're just like a bunch of kids arguing. They are true representatives of the Australian people, because that's what we like inside our heads, because we're always complaining, arguing, thinking, worrying, whatever it is goes on inside our head. It's very little silence. So once you've got very strong present moment awareness, and see if you can attach to silence, attach to it. Every time the mind starts moving into thought, stop it, so you can come back into the silence. Every time a thought comes up, shush, be quiet and come back. In just the same way that somebody starts talking to you on this retreat, you don't need to tell them, be quiet. Otherwise, you've broken your vow of silence as well. So, when somebody talks to you, you just lift one finger to your mouth and put it across your mouth. So that's a sign saying, no talking. Or if that doesn't work, put your hands over your ears. And if that doesn't work, put your hands over their mouth. Well, that should be a sign that you're not going to listen to them, that you shouldn't be talking. You don't have to break into speech to be quiet. The same way that when you're meditating, it's actually to quiet down that talking mind. It's as easy as stopping you talking with your mouth. Just say, shh, be quiet, until you learn how to know in silence, how to feel without saying anything, how to listen without giving things a name, even how to eat and taste your food with no conversation going on inside your head at all. So you're fully aware, alert. You're listening, you're feeling, you're seeing, you're hearing, you're knowing in what we call full awareness. If you're listening with one ear and you're talking with the mouth of the mind, you're not really listening. This degree of silence I sometimes call total listening. Total listening means listening with everything you've got, which means your ears have to be free from the thoughts going on in the mind. Your eyes have got to be free of the inner conversation. Your mind has to be free of all thought. So there's no obstruction to your clear seeing, hearing, tasting. No obstruction to your clear knowing. you have silence in the mind. Attach to that silence. Enjoy it. Get into it. And see how silent you can be. Every time a thought comes up, a word, a silent word inside the mind, shh, be quiet, listen. One of the reasons why people don't become wise, why they don't know anything, is because the world of Dhamma is teaching us in every moment. But we're talking too much inside, so we can never listen. Never listen to the world fully. It was always fascinating that all these monks which I grew up with in Thailand, all these great teachers who had never gone to school, or at least not more than grade 4, that they were so wise. And all their similes came from nature, from the forest, from the animals, from the seasons around them. Why did they get that wisdom while others didn't? And the reason was because their mind was so peaceful, so still. They were really listening to nature. They were seeing when the animals were playing. They weren't in their head thinking about what they're going to have for dinner, or how they can make more money, or what they're going to do to solve this problem in their relationship. Their minds were clear of that inner conversation. To make that the second stage of this meditation, silence. And again, present moment awareness and silence is something which can be done at any time. It's a general practice which goes throughout this 9-day retreat. Every moment you can practice present moment awareness and silence. When you're sleeping, when you're just walking from one place to another, when you're brushing your teeth, just this moment right now. You're not brushing your teeth to get it out of the way to do something else. There's no rush here because there's no time. You take all the time you need to brush your teeth, all the time to have a cup of tea, whatever you want to do. Present moment awareness and silence. In traditional Buddhism, that's what the Buddha meant by establishing mindfulness in front of you. This is the beginning of mindfulness, awareness, alertness. Because when you're thinking, you're not mindful of any feeling or any sound. You're just mindful of the thoughts. And that's not very mindful. You're just off in fantasy land. You're not really aware. There's a lot of difference between the word and the thing. It's the difference between the menu and the food. It's the difference between the signpost and where it's pointing to. It's the difference between the map and the territory. For those of you who have come overseas and come here for the first time, you may have looked in the books or on the videos of what Perth looked like. But what you see on the videos is very different than what you see here. I remember seeing these beautiful pamphlets about New Zealand. New Zealand is such a pretty country with these mountains and lakes, and I thought, oh, this is really wonderful. When I got there and started walking, there were all these sand flies. They didn't put the sand flies on the beautiful picture. So you couldn't sit still. You couldn't even stand still for a few moments before all these sand flies descended upon you and started biting you, and they hurt much more than mosquitoes. So, what you saw in the glossy pamphlets was very different than real life. In the same way, when we're thinking, when we're planning, when we're mind is moving, what we think of life is much different than what life really is. So, we learn how to see without thinking, to hear without a commentary, to know without thinking, without any thoughts. This is basic mindfulness. Once you have that very strong, you've got your foundations. That's why the Buddha said, to establish mindfulness in front of you first of all, and then pick up your meditation object, like the breath, or like loving kindness, or whatever else you want to do. But get those two very strong first of all. Present moment awareness and silence. You attach to those two. And only when you're standing, as it were, on those rungs, present moment awareness and silence, you've got them, then you can reach up to something higher. So So that's why that we do the breath meditation after preparing ourselves for a long while. One of the reasons why people who try breath meditation couldn't really get it, they may watch the breath time and time, hour after hour, day after day, they still can't really understand the beauty and the bliss which come from breath meditation. The reason is because they didn't have the foundation, first of all. They watch the breath, a few moments later on they're thinking about dinner. Or they're not thinking about dinner, they're off in fantasy land. Or whatever else they're thinking about in the past, what happened to them earlier on today, their relationships, their finances, whatever else it is you're worried about, your family, or whatever, your husband, all of those of you who've left your husband back in Singapore, I wonder what he's doing. So forget about all that sort of stuff. He can do whatever he wants. Let go. So what we're doing is actually preparing the foundation. Once that foundation is strong, then you just invite the breath into your mind. Because I like the breath, and this is what I usually teach here, breath meditation. As a path to insight. As I said yesterday, the Buddha said if you fulfill the breath meditation, you fulfill the four Satipatthanas. So you start with the breath. Invite the breath into your conscious awareness. What do we mean by watching the breath? It is the feeling, the sensation of breath is what you watch. And it's great having beginners and teaching beginners how to meditate, because they've got this clear mind, they haven't been confused by other teachings. So you just tell them, sit down, close your eyes, breathe in and out three times. When you finish breathing in and out three times, open your eyes. That's what I teach them. And then they all open their eyes after a few seconds, and then I say, how did you know you were breathing in and out three times? What told you? And then they start, you know, thinking and trying to put it into words, and I stop, you don't need to put it into words. You knew that an in-breath had ended, an out-breath had ended, another in-breath had gone, another out-breath had gone. You knew the third in-breath was finished, and now the third out-breath was finished. You completed three in and out breaths, you opened your eyes, you knew. What you knew then is what you watch in breath meditation. That feeling which told you you were breathing in, the feeling which told you were breathing out, that knowledge was what you watch. Now I say, sit down, close your eyes again, and this time watch 3,000 breaths. And just like you, they start laughing. And they say, I can't do that. Why not? What's the difference between 3,000 breaths and 3 breaths? Actually, there's no difference if you have present moment awareness and silence. It's only when you start thinking and go off into the future, oh, 3,000, that's too long. That's where we make our mistake. In present moment awareness, there's no difference between 3 breaths and 3,000 breaths. It's only the breath happening now that's the only thing you have. So, what we're doing is we're learning how just to stay with this feeling and sensation of the breath. And if you lose your breath during this meditation, you don't know what you're supposed to watch. Just ask yourself, am I breathing in or am I breathing out? Or am I dead? Which one? And if it's not the third one, it means it has to be one in-breath or an out-breath. It has to be something. So, that's what you watch. Breathing in or breathing out. Now, this is an important point because in some techniques you're supposed to watch the tip of the nose. In other techniques you're supposed to watch the belly. But when you read the suttas, the teachings of the Buddha, especially on meditation, there was no mention at all about nose meditation. There was no mention about belly meditation. It was breath meditation. So it's completely different than watching your belly or watching your nose. This is watching your breath. It's different. And that's great. For I saw yesterday a few people with the tissues out wiping their nose because there's still a bit of hay fever left in Perth, or you may have a cold. I used to suffer from hay fever, and when I was first taught meditation they say, please watch the tip of your nose. Ah! There's nothing going in and out there. It's all blocked up. So for those of you who have sinus problems, you don't have to worry, you can still watch somewhere else. Even when your nose is blocked up, you're breathing somewhere, that's good enough. Watch that, the sensation of breathing. And when the belly meditation became popular, and you're supposed to watch the breath at the stomach, that was another problem, especially on 9-day retreats. If you start watching in that area, about 4, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the evening, it's so close to the stomach, you'd be in big trouble. Oh, I'm hungry. So be careful of belly meditation. Be careful of nose meditation. Instead, do breath meditation, because there's always breath going in, going out somewhere, so there's always something you can watch. And you're disassociating it with the body. When you disassociate with a part of the body, all the problems and aches and difficulties in that body, whether it's the itch in your nose or the hunger in your belly, you're not even watching that, because you're not putting your attention on the body, you're putting attention on the breath. So it makes it so much easier to be able just to watch the breath rather than watch the body. You don't have to fix your attention on any part of the body. Fix it on the breath. That simile which I've been giving, it's like, you know, somebody who's trailing a terrorist, some of these secret service men, and they see this terrorist who is suspected has got a bomb, and they follow it. But the point is that they don't just look for the terrorist in the mosque. They look for the terrorist wherever he happens to be, even in a Buddhist temple or a church or whatever. Wherever the terrorist is, that's where the detective, the secret agent, has to go. The detective goes into the toilet. So if the terrorist goes into the toilet, that's where the detective goes. It follows it wherever it's supposed, wherever it is. You never think where it's supposed to be. You think where it is. It's the same with the breath. It doesn't matter where the breath is supposed to be. Where it is the most important point. Which is why that sometimes you may be watching at the tip of your nose and you can't find it there. That happened to me when I started meditating, because I was told, watch the tip of your nose, and I couldn't find my breath. I couldn't do it. And you know why? It's obvious. I'm stupid. I was watching the tip of the nose for the breath, but the breath was in there, somewhere else. That's why I couldn't see it. So these days I watch the breath wherever it happens to be. If it's in my throat, I watch it there. If it's in the bridge of my nose, that's where I watch it. If it's in my tummy, that's where I watch it. Wherever it happens to be. It's always somewhere. So I watch the feeling of the breath wherever it is. I don't really care at all if it's in any part of the body. And after a while, because you're just watching the breath, the body disappears. If you watch the body never disappears. They're watching the breath go in and go out, go in and go out. You've let go of your body. You're just watching breath. Now, of course, sometimes people have these wonderful experiences. Last August, when I gave a retreat in Singapore, a couple of people were quite scared because they were meditating there and they couldn't feel their hands. Their hands disappeared. I thought, oh, marvellous, well done. Because, you know, these hands are always so fidgety. What part of the body do you move more than anything else? These hands. So it's great when they disappear. That's one less thing you have to worry about. And then who knows, maybe your legs might disappear. So you don't have to worry about them. And wouldn't it be wonderful if your stomach and your guts disappeared? So you wouldn't have to worry about your guts and your stomach. Oh, isn't that nice? And last of all, wouldn't it be great if your brain disappeared? So you wouldn't have to think about anything. And that's what happens in meditation, the whole body just disappears. Because you're watching the breath and the body disappears and you're free. In Buddhist meditation, that's called kayapasadi. The tranquility of the body. The settling of the body. Now that's a great stage of meditation to experience. You're sitting here, you're watching your breath. You don't know what the body's doing. Just can't feel it. Just, you know, it's not like being asleep. You're fully aware, but you can't feel the body because your mind is focusing on the breath. That's so nice, because that's the time you see meditators sitting absolutely still. They just don't move. and they're not holding that position with willpower. It's not as if they're very strong and making themselves absolutely still. They just let go of their body and then it's so still. That is so comfortable. You sit for hours that way, just because the body's not giving you any trouble. So this is called kaya prasadi, when the body disappears. So you've got this breath. You're attached to that breath. In the beginning, if the breath disappears, say, am I breathing in or am I breathing out? Bring it back again. You're watching the breath and so something disturbs you, somebody coughs. Bring your mind back onto the breath. Am I breathing in? Am I breathing out? How do I know? And keep the mind on that breath. Until you get to the stage where the breath fills the whole mind. After a while, just like this present moment fills the whole mind, after a while the silence fills the whole mind, after a while the breath fills the whole mind. You find that's all you're watching, just breathing in and breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. And other thoughts and ideas, even feelings in the body, just don't come up. Great, you've let go of the body, you really have got the breath now. When you've got the breath in mind, just leave it alone. Allow it just to settle. And you'll find, naturally, the beautiful breath starts to happen. The beautiful breath is just the ordinary breath starting to evolve and starting to grow and blossom into its beauty. It's actually not really the breath becomes beautiful, it's your mindfulness becomes stronger. The energies of the mind start to build up. So this ordinary breath becomes one of the most beautiful, wonderful things you've ever seen. At that point you let go of the breath. You just allow the breath to be beautiful. And what happens there is, with a beautiful breath, it's a bit more refined breath. Actually not looking at in or out anymore. There's no beginning of the breath or end of the breath. It's just breath, that's all. It becomes more subtle and so much more beautiful. In the commentary, the Visuddhi Magga, they give this beautiful simile, which I haven't been able to better, of the carpenter sawing a piece of wood. When the carpenter is sawing a piece of wood, when it starts, you can see the handle of the saw, you can see the tip of the saw, you can see all the teeth of the saw. But when you focus, after a while, all you see is this little area where the saw is touching the wood. You can only see one tooth of the saw. That saw tooth, which is in contact with the wood. That's how focused you become. You haven't got a clue whether that saw tooth is at the end of the saw, or the beginning of the saw, or where it is in the saw. So all you see is one saw tooth. That's actually beautiful. The mind has become more refined. In breath and out breath, they're not there anymore, it's just breath. The mind is simplified. Sometimes I'm emphasizing this point because sometimes this is what happens. People think they've lost the breath. And if it's not they've lost the breath, they're seeing the breath, but they can't see in or out anymore. They can't see beginning or end. That perception has disappeared. They've gone to the next rung of the ladder, just breath. Without any in, without any out, without any middle or end, just breath. Timeless, unchanging. And that usually is the same as a beautiful breath. Because it starts to get very joyful now. And from that very refined, joyful breath, you find the breath disappears. The sawtooth now just vanishes from your perception. And what are you left with? Just the joy. Now this is, again, the meditation gets so nice here. This in particular is where you really have to remember those instructions I gave last night. Don't do anything. Don't try and get involved. Don't mess it up. This is where letting go has to be paramount. Where you just watch without interfering, where you don't grab the control levers of your meditation and push it this way and pull it that way, because if you try and get involved, it'll all fall apart. When I was a child, we used to play the games of making a house of cards. You get these playing cards, Now put two vertical and put one across like a bridge, and so it was stable. We put some other cards on top of that. We built this big house of cards, but it was so unstable, you had to be very, very careful. The higher you got, the more still you had to be when you put the next card on top. And sometimes it was so unstable and fragile, you couldn't hardly breathe, as you were putting these little playing cards, one above the other. Now this is like meditation. The higher you get in meditation, the more subtle you have to be, because even slight movements of the mind at those deep stages will set those whole house of cards collapsing. So here you have to be very still. When joy comes up in the meditation, shh, don't move, don't do anything, don't say anything. Present moment awareness, just now, who cares what happens next? Silence, don't interrupt it with the thoughts which create order, which create orders and controlling. Leave it alone, be silent, just watch. Be the silent observer. Sometimes you find you can do that. You just relax, you let go. And that beautiful breath, from this point on you don't climb the ladder, you're on the escalator. You're on the lift, it happens automatically. You go up from the beautiful breath into the beauty. And the beauty gets these wonderful nimittas come up. I say this because you don't need to be afraid when nimittas come up, lights in the mind. If you get afraid, what's going to happen? If you get excited, wow, at last, you're going to spoil it all. And you have to spend days trying to get back there. So don't mess it up. It's a wonderful opportunity to get these gorgeous states of mind. So I'm telling you now to brainwash you, to condition you. When these things come up, be even more quiet than usual and just allow them to happen. And who knows, that nimitta may stay long enough to get you into a jhana. And then you really start meditating. So who knows? That could be you. So, these are the stages of the meditation. You may have noticed I spent a long time on the beginning stages because they are the most important. You get those strong, those very firm, and the other stages happen quite naturally, quite easily. If you go too fast and present moment awareness and silence are not really strong, you waste a lot of time. So be careful. Just be very meticulous about what you do. These are stages. You can know where you are. You know what is needed to be done. You can know why it goes wrong. You can know the faults. Bring it back. Be patient. Because this is a path which works. It's a very old path, 2,600 years. Been doing this for a long time. You get good results. This is what the path is. If you have any doubts about that, we have those books about the basic method of meditation. Did we bring any of those this time? Some of you may have them, but I can get some tomorrow for you if you're necessary. Those are the steps in that book. There's a way to meditate. So I'm going to finish the talk there just by giving an opportunity for 5 minutes of any questions or comments about what I've just been saying. Yeah.
When being aware of the present moment and bringing that to just listening, for example, when I listen to anything 100%, I'm not sure that I'm comprehending it. I guess there's a conflict between listening for comprehension and purely listening. If I turn off all thoughts and I focus truly on listening, it almost becomes like I'm attending to the sense channel. You know, the sense of hearing, but then I don't know that I know what they said.
Good. So you're asking that if you're just paying like bare attention, just knowing that sometimes it's not the faculty of comprehension. One just knows the sound, but one doesn't really know what it means or what people are saying. Great. I will use a simile of the scientist, because I was a scientist before I became a monk. A good scientist who's doing an experiment doesn't try and comprehend the results until all the data have been collected. So they just keep recording the data, keep recording the measurements, you know, the figures which are on the screen. They don't try and comprehend yet. Comprehension comes when you have enough data. But if you comprehend too early, you try to figure out what it all means too early, then actually you miss the true meaning. It's like sometimes many people do listen to when somebody's talking, and before they finish their sentence, we've already figured out what they mean. And a lot of the time we miss the second half of the sentence, which actually will show us that what we thought they were saying was completely different. We rush to comprehend, and because of that we miss too much. How often is it that sort of your friend or your partner, especially, this happens in marriages all the time, they start speaking and they just start. I think, here they go again, I know exactly what they're going to say. No, you don't. You think you know what they're going to say. Shut up and listen, and you might actually hear something different. But we comprehend too quickly, or we think we comprehend too quickly. We rush to know.
Will the mind naturally, when they finish their utterance, then switch from, you know, hearing the speech literally to switch over to process it?
Correct, yeah. Processing happens quite naturally. But it's wonderful, that process which happens, you're asking that, you know, once you stop the listening, the full listening, the total listening and silence, will the mind then process it? And it does it naturally. This is actually very important when we talk about jhanas, because the jhanas, there's no possibility of comprehension within jhanas. But afterwards, one looks back and one remembers very clearly what was said and what was done. This is one aspect of clear attention or silent attention which gives mindfulness its other meaning of clear memory. This is actually how you teach children to learn well at school. When the teacher is saying something, you make your mind absolutely blank, you listen fully, you don't take notes. I must have had a natural ability at that, because I remember, especially in primary school, let alone in high school, that sometimes a teacher would say something and I would listen fully. I wouldn't be thinking at the time they were talking, and I could remember it afterwards, even in the exam which came 6 months later. I could not only remember the answer, but many times I remembered the occasion when the teacher taught us that. Remember the context. We had a very good memory. Mindfulness, sati, in the Buddhist texts, is the same word as memory. It comes from the Sanskrit smriti, which was like the tradition, the teachings handed down. You memorize them, you are mindful of them. It's recollection. And this is actually happens if one is fully mindful. Even when someone is speaking, one doesn't try to remember. One just is peaceful, relaxed and open. You'll be amazed how that increases your memory. You'll be able to recall it, because you're more alert and more awake. Every time you try and comprehend, you're interrupting the flow of information coming in. No wonder you can't remember it, because at the time they were saying that, you were thinking about something else. This is especially important in meditation. Now's the time to make the mind still. Comprehension just comes as a natural result afterwards. The deeper you are, just the more powerful are the impressions in the mind. You remember them much easier. Thank you for that question. Any others? Yeah?
Who is the observer, who is the thinker? Is the thinker and the consciousness the same? Because sometimes when I meditate, I'm aware that I have no face. And then I think, if I look in the mirror, I put an image to it, then I think I look like this. Then I think, maybe somebody else might see me as somebody different to what I think I see myself as. And then I used to think before that you look at a photograph and I see myself there. And I'm so confused now because somebody else might see that same photograph and put another image to my face. So in the same way, I find something I meditate, it's just a lump like this. And then I feel the breath. And there was a time when I was in lying meditation, lying down, and my hand was then just a lump. And then I saw like a flash of light, you know, something like a red, like a fiery thing, like a thin line of it. And next to it was a blue line, like water. I don't know if it was
What actually happens is you're asking about some experiences in meditation. Then, you know, just your perceptions of your consciousness or knower, your face, who you are. And this is where, in order to find the answers to those questions, you'll never be able to catch the answers through thinking about them. Because when you try and contemplate and you think, you just go round in circles. So all the thinking is always thinking about things. It's a very good simile because it's like a satellite which goes around a planet. It thinks around and never actually penetrates and gets inside. So here we're looking at insight. Insight literally means seeing into the centre of things. And thinking can never think into something. It thinks around. So to answer that question, you have to be very silent and very still. So silent and so still that all of these coverings of reality tend to peel off. When I talk about letting go stage by stage, you may notice, if you haven't heard me talk like this before, you are actually peeling off layers of your being. Time sometimes defines us. That's who we are, this being in time. We're old, we're young. Our words, our thoughts define us. When our thinking stops and time stops, much of who you imagined you were has gone. When the body disappears, huge amounts of your identity disappear. I don't know what country you come from.
Sri Lanka.
No, you don't. Your body may come from Sri Lanka, but it was probably fed in other countries. And all of your Sri Lankan molecules and cells are probably all mutated now because they've all been actually made in Australia. If you stay here for long enough, and after 6 months, then you're sort of, you can put made in Australia here because all the food has been sort of Australian, so it's Australian made.
I've been here for 35 years on
recycling. Oh, that's absolutely, you're very Australian. It doesn't really matter because that's only the body. Well, the body disappears. You're not Sri Lankan. Are you a woman? No, you're not a woman. Are you old? You're not old, you're not young. Because that's just body stuff. When you meditate, when things fall apart, all these other things, realize this can't be me. And you go deeper and deeper, your mind, this knower, what actually is it? So we isolate the knower. We isolate the doer, the will, the one in control. Like a scientist, the only way you can know what pure gold is, you have to refine it first of all, to get rid of all of its impurities, everything which is not gold. When you've got pure gold, 100% gold, then you can actually test it to find out what its properties are. But if there's even the slightest bit of not gold in there, slightest bit of impurity, you can't really tell what that is. So here, if you want to find out what mind is, get rid of everything else. No body, no thoughts, no time. Not even any will, no doing, just pure knowing. Then you can find out what this is. But thought can't get that far. In fact, what you find out goes against everything you've ever thought. But it's true. You cannot deny it. Real insight by seeing inside shock you to the core. Make you see things you never imagined before. That's why insights are fun. That's why insights spin you around. Wow! You cannot catch that with thought. You can only see that when all thought stops. But especially your perception. You can see the way that perceptions are just so conditioned. You can perceive yourself as fat if you want, just like people with anorexia. No matter how thin they are, they think they're overweight. You don't understand why that is, because the way the perceptions, we bend them according to what we want to see. Now when those old wants and those not wants disappear, then we can actually see things as they really are. But as long as it's wanting, as long as some vested interest, as long as it's wishful thinking, as long as it's fear, you won't see things as they truly are. That's why we have to still the mind so much. When we actually get to a real perception, a true perception, which is a perception free of the five hindrances, then we can trust that perception. Until that time, what you see is not what's really there. So we're actually, another way of looking at meditation is stilling the mind of these five hindrances which distort our cognitive process. We think we're aware, we think we're seeing, we think we know. We have so many arguments. But in that deep stillness, you truly know. If you maintain that stillness long enough, you gather enough information, you get a critical mass of data, which is the great insights. Find out what truly is happening. That's why stillness of mind is so not important, it's just essential for the arising of true insight. Otherwise you have just superficial insights. So there we go. Yeah, okay, just one more. This is absolute last for today.
Okay.
Or for tomorrow.
Do aware of the prayer in the present moment. Do I talk to my mind before I start the meditation?
Okay, this is what I call programming mindfulness. You can say a couple of words at the beginning. So you can actually tell yourself, it helps sometimes to say, you may be in the present moment, when you get into silence, and you want to go off into the breath, you can actually tell yourself, now I will be aware of the breath. Now I will be aware of the breath. Now I will be aware of the breath. Just tell yourself three times and then be quiet. And give the mind a chance for actually to be aware of the breath. It won't do it straight away, it will take time. In the same way that, you know, I might ask you, you know, can you bring me a glass of water, please, Catherine? Come on, quick, come on. I don't need to do that. I'm just going to ask Catherine, can you get me a glass of water? And I'm patient, because I know it takes time to walk all the way to the kitchen to find a glass and get a water and bring it back again. I don't expect, as soon as I ask you for something, for it to suddenly appear. In that simile, you see, this is the mind. You ask the mind, please, get me the breath. And so the mind goes off and finds the breath and brings it back to you. Give it some time to find the breath. So you can actually say a few things to the mind, but be patient. Sometimes it may be a quarter of an hour, 20 minutes before it finds the breath to give it to you. But you find if you have said those words to yourself carefully, precisely, and you've been listening, the mind will do what you ask it. The mind is a very, very good servant if you know how to treat it well. If you're kind to the mind and know how to give it precise orders, it will do it. The problem is that sometimes, while we're not precise when we ask the mind to watch the breath, we don't actually know. What do you mean watch the breath? Well, actually is that. Give precise the feeling of the breath, that which tells you whether you're breathing in or breathing out. Fine, that's what you're supposed to watch. And you listen very carefully. And then you trust. So you don't interrupt the instructions by, you know, if it fires you to go and get me a glass of water, and then you're halfway out and say, no, don't give me a glass of water, get me a sandwich. And then you're three quarters of the way out and say, no, orange juice, or a cup of tea would be better. You get so confused, what do you want? That's like the mind sometimes. The mind, what do you want? The mind gets so confused, that's why sometimes it doesn't work. So be very clear, very precise, and your mind will do whatever you want. It's nice when you've got a mind like that. A well-trained mind. If you can train your mind, you may actually start to understand how to train your husband as well. Same thing, really. You just say, husband, may I do this for me, please? And then you wait, give him time. It works. Okay, so that's enough for today. Thank you for those questions. Remember the next time for the talk this evening at 8 o'clock, that'd be the question time. So, yeah, pieces of paper outside. Is there a pen outside? Or?
Yeah, there's pencils.
Pencils, okay. So if you want to ask a question, again, I'm going to limit it to one person, one question per day. So if you write a question this morning and you think, no, I'd rather ask another one, you've got to find your old question, tear it up and replace it. And then we'll answer those questions this evening. Okay, so now we've got a couple of hours before lunch. So if you're tired, take a rest. If you want to blow off the cobwebs, have some walk outside in a beautiful garden. It's a lovely day outside. If you want to carry on meditating here, please meditate here. There's going to be no bells. If you want to meditate for the next 2 hours, sitting still, you can. If you want to sit for half an hour, walk for 15 minutes, whatever, you can. If you want to get a glass of water, a cup of tea, a coffee, you can. So just see what your body needs, what your mind needs, and act accordingly. But if you do, when you do come in and go out, please be very careful, because we are squashed up in this small room. So make sure when you come in, you don't sort of brush around the person sitting next to you. You don't disturb them. Because I said last night that if they're just about to get into jhana, if they're just that close from enlightenment, then because of your heedlessness, that you sort of brush past them and you stop them becoming enlightened. Oh, that's terrible karma. So be very sensitive to the people around you. See if you can do the burglar practice. You know what the burglar practice is? You can come into this room and sit down and no one knows you're coming. You can walk out and no one knows you've walked out. You're so quiet. So when you come in and come out, imagine you're a burglar. Yes? If anyone needs some more stools or cushions, please ask Lynn, she'll bring them back from our city centre in Olamar this afternoon, especially for you. This is compassion and kindness. So if you need any more stools or cushions or blankets or what else, anything else, whatever. If you want a new brain, give her your old one and she'll get you a new one. Okay, so please enjoy yourself until 11 o'clock. There won't be a bell at 11 o'clock, but I'm sure your natural bell called craving and greed will tell you exactly when 11 o'clock is and where the food is. Okay, have a nice